different topics under the sun is, yo, like, I'm in the classroom and compassion fatigue is a real thing right now.
You said compassion fatigue. Hold on. So before, because you about to, I feel like you about to go go in. What's going on, people? Welcome to another episode of Redefine Print, the show. I have Gerald Haskins here. He's an attorney by trade, a teacher, educator, hip-hop enthusiast.
I think we got to do this again because it's not Gerald, it's Gerard.
Gerard. Yeah. My bad.
Yeah, no worries, man. Yeah. No worries.
We got to do it again. All right, let's give it 3-3. My bad. I've been calling you Gerald this whole time. You never corrected me before, yeah?
You know what it is? And, yo, maybe we should just leave this in. Because once upon a time, I didn't care.
Gotcha. Right?
You know, it was like, as long as you didn't call me Jerry, which is a hard boundary that I have, it's like, it didn't matter to me. But then I stepped into the classroom and I had to learn all of my students' names. And I had to learn how to pronounce them correctly to show them the respect that they deserve, you know, because, you know, not only am I talking about people that look like you and I, but, you know, I also have a bunch of brown faces and, you know, the Spanish alphabet has a different pronunciation than the English alphabet. And to show them the respect that they deserve, I should be pronouncing their name correctly. And it's only fair that if I'm going to demand that they show that they have that respect for themselves, I got to have the same for myself.
Got you. So I guess I was being disrespectful by not knowing, but I heard it out loud. And I just been running with it from when we worked together.
It's not a matter of disrespect because, like you said, I never corrected you.
Yeah.
It's not disrespect until, like, you know, you offer that opportunity for them to correct the behavior. Mm. Once they don't do it after that, then comes the disrespect.
Got you. So I guess that's what people were calling you at the time. And you wasn't saying, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, it wasn't a big deal to me. It still isn't.
Okay.
But it's like, yo, if I'm gonna, I try to show my students the respect that they should ask everybody else for.
Gotcha. Nah, but I'm real big on the names too, because I'm Detravius, obviously. Some people get it wrong. So growing up, it's funny because we didn't plan this part, right? We're gonna keep all this in though. Growing up, my mother used to always say, like, don't let people shorten your name. So I was always correcting people, and it just until recently that I stopped telling people that, you know, y'all should call me Detravius for, you know what I'm saying? Because people, all first thing people always say is like, what do they call you for short? I'm like, Detravius. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But then people start calling me, so like now I'm not as anal with it. Mom, my bad. But before, like growing up for years, I used to be like Detravius, and then like, I mean, obviously people get close to me and we become more familiar. They always shorten it up anyway. Like, it's like, I'm not going to be correcting my people, my friends. Like, you know what I'm saying? But they always shorten it up anyway. But like, formerly, it's always been Detravius. Now it's just like, yo, like, you could just call me D if I'm in the mood. But let me tell you to call me that. You know what I mean?
And that's the thing, right? Yeah. Like, and therein lies the familiarity, the informal, unwritten rules. Like, I told you what my name is, right? You know my name. Since you know my name, you know how to pronounce it. Then you can go and run with, if you want to give me a nickname or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But like, it's not before that.
It's not before that.
You know, it's not a matter of, all right, yo, your name is too long. What can I call you instead? It's just like, nah, I know your name, but I'm gonna call you something else that signifies the sort of, the word escapes me, but like the nature of the relationship between you and I.
Absolutely. So like that's always been been a part of my life with the name thing, because I, like I said, Detravius, people call me Detravis, mess it up, it's been messed up all my life, and people always been trying to shorten it. Like that's like the first thing somebody, it's crazy because they'd be the first thing that somebody would say, like, but what do they call you for short? And this is like, yo, bro, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we take time. Like, would you tell that somebody to, like, so if William Gates introduce himself, would you be like, yo, I'm just gonna call you Bill, or can I call you Bill for short? Like, you know what I'm saying? But so it's a level of, I think, respect there that sometimes is not shown to people that we may or may not think are equal to us.
No, but at the same time, it's like, you know, we also have to know that we should be demanding.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a great, I like this introduction. We keeping all of this, man. We keeping all of this. So tell people where you from, man. Give us a little background history.
All right, I'm born in New York County, New York City, New York State. Mm-hmm. Medix Hill Hospital, raised in Queens, right around the corner from Benlow Park. Anybody in Southeast Queens, like, yo, if you know about the Benlow, you know about that. Right up the street from where Anthony Mason went to high school, Springfield Gardens. You know, graduate of Brooklyn Tech. You can't walk throughout New York City without like spitting at a Brooklyn Tech grad. Educated at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. Educated at Fordham University School of Law. Educated at Hunter College School of Education. Spent 10 years actively practicing, still practicing, but finishing my fourth year as a special education teacher in the South Bronx.
Got you. How did you make that transition? How or why?
To make the
transition from practicing to teaching.
Yeah, let me start with answering why first.
Okay.
I should have dropped out of law school after my first year.
Got you.
Just hated it. But, you know, the golden handcuffs, the golden shackles, mm-hmm. It was like, yo, where am I going to make a move? Like, what am I going to do? Like, what am I going to do next? It's like, you know, I have this profession, which this might be a weird metaphor, but it's always worked for me. You know, the Volt Grain Air Max 95s.
I know Air Max 95.
You know that specific color of green.
Yeah. I'm talking about. Right? The green, the Volt Grain. Yes, the
green ones, yeah, right? Yeah. Yo, they look good, right?
Yes, absolutely.
But they don't fit me.
It just
didn't fit. It didn't feel like a Jordan 6 or a Jordan 8 or you know, something like that. It just didn't fit me.
Got you.
You know, at the time, the first time I applied, as a matter of fact, you know, they were doing that advertising campaign on the subway. Saw it, filled out the application, applied. Actually, I had to do that 3 times. You know,
For the special education job.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, like I applied for the fellowship once. Got rejected twice, got rejected third time. I got it.
Gotcha.
You know, so like therein lies the how. You know, the New York City Teaching Fellows, this isn't an advertisement forum. I don't even know whether or not they got a cohort coming in this year just because of all the budget cuts throughout the Department of Education and what have you. But, it provided an avenue for somebody like me seeking to change careers.
Got you.
You know, it subsidized my education. I got my master's degree after finishing my second year teaching. So like I was in the classroom while getting my master's degree. Mm.
Got you. Well, how has that, how has teaching been going for you?
You're going to have me stumble onto like so many different topics.
Yo, feel free, brother. We got the time. You the last guest, so we got the time. Go ahead.
I bet. So like, yo, this might turn into a multi-part episode.
Yeah.
But, yo, the fact of the matter is that this, all right, yo, let's go in the spiritual direction now because I am multifaceted. It's one of those things that it wasn't something that I consciously wanted to do, but I've honestly never been happier in my life than I am right now. I've also never had less of an income than I have right now. Mm. You know what I mean? Yeah. But yo, you can't put a price on what I do. Like, yo, you can't put a price on having a kid tell you, I understand why we're learning this right now. Mm. As far as income, am I undervalued? Yeah. But to have, like, you know, students like that, you know, teenagers who are not known as the most worldly of people, aware of anything outside of themselves because they're incredibly self-centered. But to have somebody, like, show you that kind of appreciation, you can't put a price on that.
Mm. So that it feels, although the money's not there, it fills you spiritually, and the universe, the energy is worth it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's go back a step, because I'll skip forward. Talk about Brooklyn Tech, because Brooklyn Tech has an interesting, like, everybody I know that went to Brooklyn Tech is super duper proud, and I know a little bit about the background, like the Decepticons and all that started in Brooklyn Tech, right?
Yeah, that was before my time.
Now, I know it's before you. So tell me about Brooklyn Tech, a little bit before your time. What is Brooklyn Tech to people outside of New York City?
You know, Brooklyn Tech is a school that I would say is full. So actually, as a matter of fact, let me take an even further step back and explain the admissions process, which is a subject of controversy as we speak. There is an entry, there's an entrance exam in order to get into Brooklyn Tech. At the time that I took it, there were only 3 specialized high schools. I believe now there are 7, but that entrance exam is, it's mandated by statute. That entrance exam, as it's, I think it's mandated by the state of New York that there's an entrance exam to get into Stuyvesant High School in Manhattan, Bronx High School of Science, and Brooklyn Technical High School.
Okay.
So you have to have a certain academic aptitude in order to get into the school. But at the end of the day, we're still in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And I lovingly refer to my classmates as intelligent hoodlums.
Makes sense. It makes sense for me, but yeah, okay, go ahead.
You know, I mean, because it's, you know, it's a school where, you know, students are competing against each other for high grades, but they just as much about that business too. You know, before my time, you had the street gang, the Decepticons, founded in the school. Some of my football coaches, while I was there, were Decepticons back in the 80s.
Gotcha.
Right? When I was there, this is when you had Bloods and Crips coming home from Rikers back into the street. So, like, that's who I was in school with.
Okay, so it was Bloods and Crips and this magnet. You got to test in Brooklyn. It's still, like you said, it's still in Brooklyn.
Yeah. You know, like, I was outside of the school, but, like, when I came back into the school, I had seen the trail of blood because somebody caught a $150 in the hallway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotcha.
You know, yeah. But this is also, like, the same day that, you know, I had an AP chemistry exam. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's actually, as a matter of fact, you know, thinking and reflecting, this is also probably part of the reason why I can bounce from, you know, environment to environment, situation to situation, and be completely true to myself no matter what environment I'm in.
Gotcha.
You know, this is, just to kind of Now let me let you steer it. Let me let you steer it.
Nah, because, it's like, conversation, bro. It's conversation.
Yeah. Because like you see, I'm tattooed, right?
Yeah.
I made a conscious decision that instead of, you know, wearing button ups and ties and khakis and blazers and what have you, I'm gonna go to school in jeans and a t-shirt. Because the same way that I was able to read off my resume at the beginning, I'm just like them. Like there's not that much difference in how I look, how I talk. I just have the experience of, what is that? 4 + 3 + 2, 9 years of school after high school.
Got you.
You know, because I was about my business. I wasn't built for what the Damus, Lokes, D-Seps, and whomever was doing. Like, I wasn't built for that.
Yeah. So, take it back with, I mean, I know this is before both of our time, right?
Yeah.
So, I know it's in the middle. So, Brooklyn Tech is like, what is considered the number one or number two high school? When you were there.
When I was there, it was considered, I think it probably would have been considered anywhere between like 2 and 4.
Okay.
Like, you know, on the hierarchy, because there was a higher score threshold to get into Stuyvesant. And Bronx Science.
Okay. But
there was also Townsend Harris, which is now considered part of that specialized high school cohort. Mm-hmm. But was extremely picky when it came to admissions.
Got you. And you were there, so you were there in the late 90s, right?
Yeah, 96 to 2000.
So I'm just painting a picture for people that I'm assuming I know I got some people that's overseas that listen to it. I don't know if they've been in New York. So New York City in the 90s, let's take them back to late 90s. It was calming down a lot. But you got there in 96. It still was kind of wild in 96.
Yeah, it was it was kind of wild in 96, but like everything was so wild, like wild was normal. But like looking back on it, it's just like, yo, that was crazy.
That was crazy. Yeah. I remember the first time I went to New York on my own without, you know, parental advisory, parental guidance and all that. I went, so I got you by a few years. I went, it was 1993. So, and we went to 42nd Street. Man.
that was Old Times Square.
Yeah, not the new Times Square people, the old Times Square.
Matter of fact, if you're going there in 93, you probably got there before Rudy got there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. So it was crazy. I went with a couple friends. So my mother moved me out of the suburbs when I was going to the eighth grade. So we suburban kids. Like the kids I'm with, they don't got a street bone in anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I was in the hood from birth to 13. So I'm with these guys and we go. So it was just an eye-opening experience for all of us. Cause I'm from Jersey. I'm not from New York. Like it's an eye-opening. Like, so, you know, they had all the peep shows and, you know, the strip joints and all that type of stuff. This is the old Times Square people. This no longer exists. So, and it's so crazy. So we walking up and down the street, like everybody know you're not New Yorkers. You know what I'm saying? Especially at that time. I don't know if you could tell now, but everybody knows, like, you're not, these jokers not from New York.
You can tell by their walking speed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we go in, so in 93, what I was like, was 16 years old. We go, so all of us are 16. So we go, I didn't drink back then at all. I mean, you're not supposed to be drinking at 16, but one of the kids I was with, he went and we went into the liquor store. Like they sold him a 40. That's when 40s and all that type of stuff was a thing. Yeah. Yo, he went and brought a 40 and it was just like, yo, it was just crazy. It's a culture shock period. Just like, it was just so wild and open. Right. But then two is just like, yo, I know we did not look like we were old enough to buy a 40, but they sold it to him anyway, man. He's walking around drinking a 40. He got drunk and that. Like, yo, bro, like it was just I will never forget it because it was like the first time I've been in New York without my mom. You know what I'm saying? And it was just like, I would whip my peers and it was just such like, wow, like this joint is crazy. And yeah, because we came to Grand Central Station. That's mm-hmm. And we almost missed the bus going back home, which would have been a whole another problem. But we made it back home. But it was crazy though, man.
Yeah.
So that's the. So you were at the tail end. So you saying 96? We're still crazy in New York, 96. But go ahead.
Yeah,
because
like that's you know like nine like I feel like I think like in that period like you know like 93 to like 97. I would have been like, you know, between the ages of 10 and 14. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I really knew about anything except like, you know, just a typical street cruise.
Yeah.
You know, just doing whatever they might have been doing. And like, I know that people were getting live. But at that time, it was real, like, it wasn't until my sophomore year of high school. That's when I started hearing about the Los Angeles street organizations having their names ring out on the East Coast.
Yeah. Yeah, it happened around like, when it first got on my radar, around like 94 in New York. And then I think like around like 95, 96, it started hitting Jersey crazy.
Yeah, like it definitely hit my radar on like 97.
Yeah, so, yeah, they were still on a... They were still like the first time I ever heard of a blood in New York was in I believe it was 94, 95. The first time I heard of it in Jersey was definitely like 96. And the only reason I really remember this type of stuff is because my cousin, he was a Crip. He from Cali. They actually did a Vice piece on him. That they did. It was it's called a Murder Mayhem and something. Redemption or something like that. It's on HBO. Whoa, it's okay. On their YouTube page. But anyway, so he ended up doing like, well, before we get into that, so he was a Crip and he was in Cali and he had some issue with a Mexican gang and they shot up his crib and, you know, his mother was scared, sent him to come live with us. So this was in 93.
Okay.
And he's a year older than I am. And the only reason I really remember like the time frame like that, because I remember when he came here, he was so like, just looking at like his head on the swivel, like, yo, who that, why they got on there, all this red? And he never said red, he used to say dead, like you wear a lot of dead, you know what I'm saying? And it was so, and we went to see Minister Society together and he was just breaking down everything. Like, yo, like that's great, that's Jordan Downs, that's this, that, and the third. And he was bringing, it was all foreign to me because, you know, mm-hmm. all we had was Snoop, right? Snoop and MC8 was talking about it,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, on the blood, and it was but he wasn't even talking about blood stuff. It was DJ Quick like that? I mean, you knew he was a blood, but he wasn't really banging it.
Now it wasn't until Minister Society that like he really started on like DJ Quick, like he really started on that because like that's when MC8 and DJ Quick had
Yeah, absolutely. And only like I said, the only reason I remember that because he came, like he was a year older than me. And he was talking about like, he was schooling me on like the gang coach. And it was just so, and I remember telling him like, yo, that would never come over here. And three years later, it came.
Yo, I got a dissertation topic when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, from a sociological standpoint, in my humble opinion, and yo, like, I'm really the last person that should be speaking on street politics because I ain't in it, I ain't doing it. But to me, the parallels between those wars that they're fighting out there and the wars that we're seeing in the Middle East between, Israelis and Palestinians, it's not so much about, you know, my allegiance to one team versus the other. But it's like, yo, you harmed my mother, father, sister, brother, cousin, some sort of relative. I want revenge on you and everybody that's associated with you.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, because I think at this point, these jokers, like I say, obviously I'm far away from the streets than ever. I'm the softest person on the internet. I don't want no problems. But I think you're on to something, and I think from the outside looking in, like, especially on the West Coast, I can't really talk about the East Coast, Bloods and Crips and stuff like that. The West Coast drink, from outside looking in, like, it's been going on for so long, like, they don't even know what it's about. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the initial beef?
I mean, actually, as a matter of fact, like, I literally just remembered, and, like, I've been thinking about this sort of dissertation topic for a couple of years. Uh-huh. Protestants and Catholics in Ireland. I went out there to study like some dispute resolution out in Ireland.
For real? That's interesting.
Yeah, like I did that. Yeah. I did that. Actually, as a matter of fact, one of the things that motivated me was that one of the people that was one of the professors that was going on the trip was one of the co-authors of one of our amendments to the United States Constitution regarding presidential succession.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Talk about that though. Talk about that, because that's one thing we don't talk about. Because being an American, United States of America, like a lot of, we are so. I mean, I guess it's going on across all over the world, but I'm only speaking about America because that's what I know and what I breathe. Like we think we are the center of the world, so like we don't think about like tribalism in other places like that. So talk about like,
one of the things that like, or the thought that really like made me remember that month-long party that I went on, mm-hmm. Is been fighting for so long, can't even remember why we fighting in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, going out there, and especially this would have been like 2005, which would have been right after that second war that Bush started, Bush the second started, uh-huh. You know, because like I was in Ireland, I was in the Netherlands. I'm just off of how I dress, how I talk, you know, I'm an American. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Jordans, I had the durag, the oversized hat, the long white tees. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, we're talking about 2005, right?
Yeah, that's the 2005 era. Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
you know, so I just finished my first year in law school. I'm out there. I'm still me.
Yeah.
Because, like, no matter what, the thing that got me hired to my job was because I was being me during the interview. Listening to a lot of people talk about their views of America, and I think a lot of them wanted to instigate a fight, not really realizing what it's like to be a Black man in America. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you realize I agree with you, right? Like you're not inflaming any sort of hostility from me, because at the end of the day, and this is something that I don't think people really understand, my great-grandfather was emancipated. Generational-wise, my mother's grandmother, my great-grandmother, was still alive when I was born. She didn't pass until I think I was 14. That's how many generations we're talking about.
Yeah.
This is how many generations we're talking about. This is how far removed I am from being a slave, which is part of the reason behind this tattoo that I have. Mm-hmm. It's a barcode.
Okay.
Because once upon a time, I was property.
Property, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So hearing some of the perspectives as to how the leader of the country, which I have citizenship to, that was eye-opening. Partly is just like, wow, the hostility that they have. And then it's just like, you know what? I don't want to agree with you, but you're not wrong.
Got you. So talk about that tension, though, because you said you went out there to learn dispute resolution.
We were out there during their parade time, right? Which is like, there's a lot of parades, like, you know, this group is having this parade, this group is having this parade. That's usually when the bombings happen.
Got you. And this is in Ireland, correct?
Yeah, this is in Ireland, you know. So the same way, like, you remember that scene in Boys in the Hood where Doughboy flashes his weapon to the CMGs?
Yeah, and then, we got a problem here.
Yeah, you got a problem here, and then like one of the CMGs sprays in the air.
Yeah,
that's what I was there as that very situation could have popped up.
And this is based on religion.
Their
version of. You say they're not, so it's based. So religion is the gateway to, or a reason for the tension, but it's not really the.
Let me pull it back even more. When I'm saying Protestants and Catholics, these are really just the names of the factions, because Protestant and Catholic, Unionist and. Unionist and Republican, basically it's the same divide. The entire divide there is whether or not somebody would rather be independent from the United Kingdom or stick to that alliance. It's the same sort of liberal conservative split that we have in our country. It's Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter.
Got you. Okay.
You know, it's the same. It's an ideological divide that is so ultimately inconsequential because I'm Protestant. My wife is Catholic. I have no separate understanding of the Bible from hers, aside from traditions, but the significance of those traditions mean nothing to me. I'm not religious. The religious, in that context, were the Pharisees in the New Testament. Just strict adherence to rules. It's like, if they're significant to you, believe that I respect it. But the significance of tradition and ceremony means nothing to me. I respect that you appreciate it, but I don't like to adhere to that. I don't like to adhere to ceremony for the sake of ceremony.
Okay, but you are the exception to the rule, though, when it comes to that.
No, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
I understand that, like, I don't think like other people, but at the same time, like, I don't want to think like other people.
Got you. No, I'm just throwing that out there. So, because, most people, because a lot of stuff that we do, and I mean, obviously, I'm preaching to the choir, pun intended. but like a lot of times, like we don't sit back and think about traditions and ceremony when it comes to more than just religion and all that type of stuff. Like why we do what we do, like we're trained to just go and do what we are told to do, like, so it takes like a lot of self-reflection and pain really in a lot of ways to really be like, nah, like that's not what I know, that's what I've been told my whole life, but that's not necessarily what I believe or I want for my life. And I don't think many people get to that point. I think most people just go through life, I'm supposed to, take communion on whatever it is. Like I'm saying, we just talk, it's multiple things in religion, but I'm just keeping religion because that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And we just, go through life just because I've always done that. Like, why have you always done that? You know what I mean?
And to me, like, the reason why I don't put any weight behind that tradition and ceremony is because I don't believe in a big spook in the sky, but I believe that there is an intelligence behind the creativity of the universe.
So that, like, that, what do they call it? An intelligence design?
Intelligent design. Because, even if I want to be a strict slave and adherent to science and, you know, sitting like, you know, like the story of creation in Genesis is the Big Bang. Who created that small, dense point which exploded? You know what I mean? And ultimately, you know, when it comes to that creative intelligence, I think of it that, like, all of these ills and what have you that we're talking about right now, it boils down to one word.
What's that?
Relationship.
Okay.
The relationship that I have with myself, the relationship that I have with my with other people, the relationship that I have with my creator. Right? The relationship that I have with my boss is none of your business. The same way the same relationship you have with that same person is none of mine. And they're allowed to be different, you know, because the relationship that my boss has with his wife or his husband, none of my business either. It's like, it's not supposed to be the same.
Gotcha. Now, I agree with you. I wish I could push back to make it more, we got some more controversy on the podcast, but I try to just, I'm doing what I would normally do. So I'm not being sick for entertainment, going to make it more than what it is. Now, I 100% agree with you. I think that's part of the problem is that most people don't agree with us on that.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I was listening to JVP earlier, and it's just like, yo, all the lessons that we learn as youngsters really boil down to mind your business and stay in lane.
Gotcha. Yeah, absolutely. So let's connect this to hip hop, man. We bonded over hip hop, and I think for you, you probably, based on our conversation, I remember like you, your hip hop historian. You probably should be a hip hop. It's crazy. So the thing that I got you in the pod, well, it was multiple reasons why I wanted you in the podcast, but one of the things that jumped off this one, like the immediacy of it, it was the I had posted something about Drake. I said Drake is the GOAT. And he was like, yo, nah, what you talking about? I was like, yo, let's do it on the pod. Cause I'm interested, because I respect your opinion on it, and we're gonna connect it to the education part later on. But
I mean, it boils down, like, I don't want to ride myself, but, you know, even like if I come up with an opinion very quickly, it's going to be so nuanced that, like, you realize that, like, in that second, in that millisecond, a lot of thought went into it, right? Here's why I can't say that Drake is the GOAT. In the art form of hip hop, there's entirely too much weight that's put on your pen. And Drake's pen has been pulled into question.
Okay. Right?
To me, that automatically disqualifies him from GOAT, but we also got to talk about, what are we talking about when we're talking about GOAT? You know, he's the greatest of all time at what?
Yeah. So let me rewind. So to give people context that don't follow us on social media or missed it. So I say he's the GOAT. So the first part of the sentence I said is a late Gen X, which I am, early Gen Y, which is what you are. Mm-hmm. When are we gonna say Drake is the GOAT? And the reason one, I knew that was gonna get people, you know, in a bundle, but I think. And you brought up the great point, because I assumed you was gonna bring that up. The reason why, my criteria is impact on the game, lyrics, obviously.
I have to interrupt you. I have to.
Okay.
I have to, because the second that you say impact on the game, he's automatically the GOAT.
He's automatically the GOAT.
He's automatically the GOAT based on impact on the game.
Yeah.
You know, which is why, like, you know, we got to talk about the criteria. Yeah. And we are going back to the historian point.
Yeah.
You can trace, like, shifts in the sound to, like, you know, like, different eras.
Yeah,
because, absolutely. Like, you know, there was the late 70s, early 80s. Which was it tried to sound like kind of disco-ish.
Hip, Hop, hibbited. Yeah. That was the way back then. Yeah.
And then it was what? Then it would have been what, like 83, 84, around like your Cool Moe D, Run DMC.
They started screaming a little bit. It was a little bit of screaming. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but like also you heard the pens kind of shift. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't just as much like, you know, I'm the party rocker to like, nah, yo, I'm nice with the pen. You know, mm-hmm. like I can rock the I can rock the party based on what I'm saying, not just off a gimmick.
Gotcha.
But like there was a lot of shouting, like you said.
Yeah.
And then we had that shift and it would have been what, 87, 88?
So it's interesting that you break it down like that, but yeah. I think you're definitely more nuanced than that. So I have it's a pre-Rakim and then there's a post-Rakim. That's how.
Of course.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and then it's more after that, but before. Yeah. So everybody before Rakim is all kind of, I like your breakdown more though. Every day before this conversation, everybody that I had pre-Rakim was pre-Rakim. Like that was just the era. Like post-Rakim is different. Breakdowns because I became of age and I was listening really.
Yeah, but there were eras even before that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because like we also got to think in like pre-recorded, like we don't have evidence of what it sounded like then.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, but you know, like talking about these eras, there was a shift. I want to say it was probably anywhere between like 2008 and 2011 in the shift of the sound. Right, where we had a return to the 808s because of all of the headaches that we were getting from the Chipmunk Soul of the early 2000s, where like you know, producers had to truly become composers and truly start making original compositions. We've been in this era longer than any of the other eras, and probably longer than any two eras combined. And this was all because primarily, I would say, Wayne, Ross, and Drake.
Drake, yeah. Wayne is up there. His impact was crazy. Yeah. Wayne, yeah.
Yo, you want some controversy?
Go ahead, man. We need it.
Yo, damn near every single one of these rappers right now owe their careers to Nelly.
See, that's controversial, but not to me. I get where you, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, like if I want to trace it back a little bit farther, I would say Bone Thugs and Harmony in 3-6.
Bone Thugs was definitely, so it's interesting that you bring them up. I never really got into 3-6, so I can't speak on them like that. I mean, I know singles, whatever. But Bone Thugs, I didn't appreciate Bone Thugs until much later. Like, because we were from the East Coast. I knew people that was super into them, but I didn't appreciate them until, like, really, it's kind of sort of went too big, kind of sort of put them on the record. That's when I really was like, I mean, obviously I knew the songs and I've heard their album, but I didn't really, really appreciate it until, like, Biggie flipped their style on his joint. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, oh, let me go back and listen to Bone Thugs, because if Biggie into it, why am I, you know what I'm saying? Why am I not?
Exactly.
But, yeah, so a lot of these cats now sounds like, they sound like Bone Thugs, but they obviously they took it and made it their own, but there is Bone Thugs style, especially like the Migos and all that. That's all Bone Thugs.
Like, without Bone and without Nelly.
So why do you say Nelly? But go ahead. My bad. I didn't even cut you off.
Nelly, I think, took the melodies that Bone Thugs brought to the raps, which had been lost in like all of those early shifts, really brought the melodic rapping, which is ubiquitous now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I was saying Nelly doesn't, I can't push back on Nelly. Like I said, maybe it's, you know, commentary that people comment on the controversy. Like for me, Nelly, I didn't appreciate Nelly like that in real time either.
Neither did I.
And then I went back within the last 5 years, actually. I went back. I don't know what made me go back to Nelly, but then I went back.
Exactly what made me go back to Nelly. It was one of those memes where it was like somebody pointed out that the hook to Country Grammar is basically about a drive-by. I was like, yo, wait,
yo, we probably had the same moment. I was like, and then I started, I'm like, yo, his whole album, he talking some gangster shit. It just sound, but
it sound good.
You sound good. Yeah, I'm like, yo, if you go back and listen to that Nelly first album, it's all gangster, I'm murdering, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, but he was, the way he played it, like, you wasn't even, I'm going with downtown, baby, street sweeper, baby. I'm like, yo, he talk about killing everybody on the block.
and it was a number one. It was a diamond single.
It was diamond single. It was crazy.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it was just like, I had to go back. And I don't apologize for the criticisms that I had back then. Right? Mm-hmm. Because I still question his pen.
Who, Drake or Nelly?
Both.
Both.
But for different reasons. Okay. It's just like, one, I question whether or not he's writing. The other, I'm just like, I don't like what you're saying. Like,
okay.
But then again, I also had to get older, and we probably had this conversation before off mic. Drake makes great music, but he's not talking to me.
Yeah, he's not talking to me either, but go ahead.
No, like he's, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Something like conversations that I've been having with specifically like your 45 and up crew, who's just like, I hate all this mumble rap.
Yeah.
Did any one of them listen to Lil Baby on Wants and Needs?
Nah, probably not. Lil Baby spitting though.
Lil Baby snapped on that.
Yeah. Lil Baby spitting. Yeah.
Yo, I think he spit what might be the, if it's not the best, it's the second best brag line I've ever heard on a song.
So what song is this? I gotta write it down because I don't think I heard it.
Wants and Needs. It's off of Drake's latest 3-pack.
Wants and Needs. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
He said, I'm not a goat, but I fit the description.
And you was feeling that.
It's so simple.
Yeah.
But like, it's so slick. I mean, but like, I like those kind of slick talking lines. It's like, yo, I've been sonning people so long, I think I got a grandson.
You got a son.
I like those lines.
Like, yeah, so let me give you the criteria what I came up with Drake.
Okay, okay.
Cause it was so impact was like the number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Longevity, body of work.
Mm-hmm.
Lyric plays a part in actual like song making. So he's not the best in any one of those categories. Like he's not, I mean, he's not the number one in any of those maybe impact, maybe. I don't know. That's debatable. I think Jay-Z impact is crazy.
I don't think anybody's had a bigger impact than Tupac.
Yeah, you're right. I can't disagree with that. I mean, you gotta say something I disagree with. I can't disagree with that.
But the thing is like, yo, same way with Nelly, I question Tupac's pen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the reason why I don't go hard with him on with the allegedly not writing all his songs. The reason why I don't go hard as some people would go, like purists or, you know, people that's, you know, semi-purists, is because even if he's, yo, Drake put a lot of stuff out. If he wrote 90% of the stuff that he actually wrote, like, yo, it's still crazy amount of.
Yeah, but here's the other reason why I had to disagree with you on Drake being the GOAT. I don't consider him a hip hop artist.
That's fair.
I consider him a pop artist.
Pop artist, that's fair. I can see that. But he started off as a hip hop artist though.
He still is, but like I think he also his greatest strength is his weakness, and that's his versatility.
Versatility, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like I don't want to listen to Drake sing.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to listen to Drake spit the same type of spit that he was spitting on that Lemon Prepper freestyle.
I just listened to that. I listened to that yesterday again. I listened to it three times in a row. I was like, yo,
he's not like, here's the thing that like I wish people would understand about criticism. It's a critique.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, I'm tearing it apart, but it's also because it's like one of the things that I emphasize on when it comes to the education, it's critical thinking.
Critical thinking. Absolutely.
It's just like, I have a critique and like I'm tearing it apart and it sounds like I'm downplaying it. I'm just like, nah, it's just like I really thought about this from every single angle.
Angle, yeah. Nah, I mean, obviously I know you, so that comes across in your conversation. And hopefully it's coming across in this podcast. Yeah. So let me be clear for everybody and for you too. It's like I'm not even a fan of Drake's for real. Like I like his music, but it's not something I'm gonna necessarily listen to, like just like, yo, I'm about to listen to some Drake. Like I gotta be in a real mood, and it's gonna be certain Drake. So it's not necessarily gonna be like the emo Drake. It's gonna be the Drake when he spitting them that crazy lines, like, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, Lemon Pepper, I listened to that joint three times in a row yesterday. I was like, yo, he done snapped on it. Mm-hmm. The reason why is more like a jab at us being, you know, late gen, because I feel like I'm late Gen X, but I might as well be Gen Y. And you like early Gen Y.
Yeah, no, like we're like there's a cusp generation. I think it's like 77 to 83-ish.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 70, right. I said the same thing. Like 77, 83 is like a period where I think that group of people needs to be its own.
Yeah, no, it's the Oregon Trail generation.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, so that, I think we're at each end of that spectrum. But it's
the Oregon Trail. I'm still in that, man. I'm gonna give you some credit. The Oregon Trail generation.
There was something that you said, and like my brain went on a completely different tangent with Benny the Butcher. But like, yeah, like, yo, because of our age, yo, we're not in our 20s anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not in our teens. We're not his audience.
Not his audience, yeah.
We're not his audience. And as a matter of fact, he shouldn't be making music for us.
Yeah.
Like he shouldn't be making music for us. Like there's not money in that aside from, you know, I don't want to go see Drake on tour. Mm-hmm. I want to see Jay-Z on tour. Mm-hmm. But at this point in his career, Jay-Z's a legacy act.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like I want to see, like, you know, I've seen Nas. I've seen, you know, like those artists who like they're not in the active recording part of their career, but they're touring. Like I've seen Big Daddy Kane. Mm-hmm.
I never seen Kane live, man. Never seen him live.
Actually, matter of fact, I saw Kane when I got results of the bar exam that I passed.
Wow. That's what's up. Yeah. I never seen Kane. Kane was my favorite rapper back in the day.
Kane was my favorite rapper. Pete Rock was my favorite producer.
Pete Rock, yo, say something I'm disagree with. Yo, no, Pete Rock, yo. So I loved Mecca and the Soul Brother. Was that the name of the album?
Yeah, that was the name of the album.
And it wasn't necessarily because CL Smooth was dumb nice, but it was like what Pete Rock did on that album is incredible.
Yo, I think we just stumbled onto something because CL Smooth wasn't dumb nice. He wasn't whack either.
No, he definitely wasn't whack, yeah.
You know who else fits that exact description?
Cool.
Gangstar.
Guru, yeah.
Yeah, Guru wasn't dumb nice, but like he wasn't whack neither. But Premier was the star of the show.
Yeah. So Premier, one of my favorite albums. This ain't gonna be controversial to you because it's Group Home album from production, like sonically. What was it called? Living Proof. Yeah. That's one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. I do not remember Lyric One from that album, but those beats were crazy.
The beats is crazy. Sonically is crazy. I remember a couple lines here and there. But sonically, it was on. I always say, like, my joke is, if I ever meet with Cook Premier, I'm going to ask him, like, what did the Nutcracker and what was her other homie name?
It was Malachi and Little Dap.
Yeah, Little Dap. What did the Malachi and Little Dap have on you for you to give them all that fire? Yeah. Like, that album sonically sounds better than everything you did for Gangstar.
Yeah, yo. But thinking of, you know what song I'm mad that it took us so long to get, or what collaboration? Cause do you remember like the collaboration between DJ Quick and Dr. Dre for the Watch soundtrack?
What's that?
Put It On Me. That was the name of the song.
Yeah.
Right? So that was two of my favorite producers collabing. I'm just so mad that it took so long for Premier and Dr. Dre to collab on Animals with Anderson .Paak.
I gotta go back and listen to that.
Yeah, like it was on the Compton soundtrack.
Oh, that's so. See, I don't have the liner notes anymore.
Yeah, no, that was Primo, Dre, and Anderson .Paak.
Gosh, I'm gonna go listen to that when we get off the phone. Cause I listen to the soundtrack, but like, you know, back in the day, you used to rip it open, and the first thing you do if you was ahead, you would go back and read who did what and where the samples is from. Like now, yeah. I don't have the.
You gotta go on Wikipedia for that now.
Yeah. I do miss that era of just the. I don't even know if I would still be into that if we were forced to do that, but I remember like that was the first thing you pop the CD in or the tape in, and the first thing I was doing is looking at the inside while I was playing.
Like I'm reading the shout outs.
I was always reading
the shout outs. You know, it's like, you know, that's how I knew anything about BMI and ASCAP.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's how I knew anything about BMI and ASCAP. That's how I knew. Like that, I was aware that publishing was a thing or an industry, even though I still don't fully understand it.
Yeah.
And
for real, I don't really practice that type of law anyway, but it's really not meant for you to understand because it kind of sort of don't make sense because there's publishing rights, right? So then you got publishing, then you got royalties, then you have, you know, it's mechanicals, then it's what's the other one? It's a whole bunch of stuff.
Mechanicals, but the piano.
Yeah, so it's like it was really made to that whole law was those laws were really made to jerk artists. You know what I'm saying?
At the end of the day. But you know what? Like I'm gonna leave this piece here for the next time that we speak. Mm-hmm. But that obfuscation of information. Mm-hmm. Is exactly why the education system currently set up is painfully obsolete and does a disservice to everybody, not just people that look like us.
So let's build on that. So let's connect your project, the hip hop, let's connect all of that. Let's bring it full circle. The hip hop, the education, the critical thinking into what you're doing and your vision. Yeah. For you and your students going forward, or the education system?
You know, so I think you and I and our parents had the same sort of education. You know, bell rings, go to class. Bell rings, leave class, go to the next one. Bell rings, you know, like in that sort of conditioning. That's a product of the Industrial Revolution because, like, you know, the workers, bell ring, they start, bell, the whistle blows, they stop, they go eat lunch, whistle blows, your break is over, you got to go back to work. But last I checked, we're in the middle of the third Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. The last I checked, I believe in our lifetime, we have gone from a primarily agricultural economy to a service economy to the economy that we're in now, which is a purely information economy. The only thing currently that has any value is information, full stop. You know, the information contained within the blockchain of Bitcoin versus, you know, this other cryptocurrency versus this NFT, that's the only thing that has value. These clothes that I'm wearing, like, you know, the only thing that we're trading in is information. And he who has the most information is the most valuable.
Mm.
You know, gotcha. How does the saying go? It's just like, say, for example, I'm going to go back to The Wire. You remember Amsterdam?
Absolutely. I watched The Wire 3 times. Yeah. About to watch it again. So,
you know, me and my wife got want to binge it again. But it's just like in Amsterdam, the man with the gun has all the power.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what that was the line from there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. 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 So as a sidebar, my law school dean at the time, well, he was the mayor of Baltimore at one time. Dean Schmoke, I forgot his first name. That was his idea. Amsterdam. He wrote a paper about it, and they pushed him out of politics because he was saying, like, why are we criminalizing, you know, drug use and the selling? Like, why don't we just push him in, you know, one area so we could contain it? And they basically pushed him out of politics because of that.
Mm.
But go ahead. But he's from Baltimore. He's born and bred. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like the education system as currently constructed, which is built all around this data behind high stakes testing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, testing as currently constructed is utterly useless. I have absolutely no idea what you know, because all you're really doing is memorizing and regurgitating as opposed to actually applying what you've learned.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to push back on you, but go ahead. Let's see what you're going with.
I don't think I had more of a thought behind that.
Yeah, nah. So I was going to push back, but you kind of brought me all the way to, so I'm glad I didn't cut you off. Because I was going to say, I don't necessarily know that is the person, the most powerful person is the person with all the information, because we have it. We all have access to it. It's applied information, applied knowledge. And I think going forward, I think the people that are going to be the most valuable, quote unquote, right, when you talk about money, is curation. The person that can curate. For example, this is a great example. We talked about hip hop, like the hip hop list on somebody's hip hop list on Spotify. Like if you're on that list, like you become like the shit, basically. I don't know who it is.
I think isn't it what was the dude from XXL? Elliot Wilson.
So that is it his list? It's somebody's list. Yeah. His list. Yeah, so it's somebody's list that like basically if you're not. Like if you're on that list, you're golden, basically. At least for the moment, right? Because everything moves so fast. But if you the key is to get to that. So Elliot Wilson, I don't think it can be Elliot Wilson. I think he has to deal with Tidal. But it's somebody though.
Yeah.
It's somebody. So it might be on Tidal. My bad. It's somebody's list that basically if you're the rapper, you have to get on this list.
But here, I think, and actually, as a matter of fact, I think that this is a case where you and I are both agreeing, but like we're looking at it from different standpoints, because let's use Elliot Wilson just for the sake of the example. Might be wrong about that, but Elliot Wilson is the gatekeeper of who's hot right now, right? Mm-hmm. That information that he shares with us of who's hot, like he's the purveyor of hot or not, right? Mm-hmm. But let's think back to
DJ Clue.
I was going to take it outside of that to like, mm-hmm. you know, like remember Vine.
Mm-hmm. Who?
Vine. Like the app Vine.
Oh, Vine. Yeah. That went out of business. Like, yeah.
the people who said Vine was hot were like the 13 to 18 year olds in 2011. Mm-hmm. We in 2021, those 13 to 18 year olds are now 23 to 28. They're no longer the arbiters of who's hot and who's not.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, because like they don't have the voice to dictate that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like, as a curator, he has value until he no longer has value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was simple, but it makes sense though. Yeah, so like I always say, like it's not the same thing, but it's the same thing. Like, if you can't be used, you're useless.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, so somebody can't. So, you know, we always talk about, you know, capitalism and like this whole thing of being exploited and all about that. But if you can't be exploited, then you are kind of sort of useless. Whether how much you get exploited, we all being exploited on some level, right? But it's like, if somebody can't use you, like, what are you?
And I can't remember who I had this conversation with. Matter of fact, it might have been an educator, like talking about like the concepts of like, which was the whole point where I was talking about the current education system as.
Oh yeah, yeah. I took you off your track.
No, but like you took us off track only to take us right back to the track. Is that like, if you can't be used, you're useless. The problem that I see with our system as currently constructed is that too many employees and not enough employers.
Okay.
You know, like we shifted in and out is a bunch of employees. It's like, you know, tell me what to do, how to do it, and when to do it. As opposed to being useful in as much as identify a problem and create a solution to the problem that you've identified.
Oh man, you broke up.
Oh, I broke up?
Yeah. You said identify a problem, create. Go ahead. That'd be at a point.
And create the solution to the problem and create. So you've created the value for yourself and you've also created the demand for yourself. So you get to dictate what your value is. Like, you know, just to go back to another example, the dude who came up with the cordless phone, whoever that was, do you need a cordless phone right now?
Nah, not at all.
Nah, neither do I. Yeah. But like, yo, that dude found a problem, identified the solution, and cashed out.
Mm. We hope he cashed out. Or whoever got his IP cashed out. Yeah.
Let's not even go down that route. But like, you know, like that dude cashed out. But whoever owns that IP cashed out. But whoever owns that IP, put it in here now.
Yeah.
Because this is a cordless phone.
That's a cordless phone, absolutely. So this is, it's funny that you bring this up, because I always say, like, it's interesting that we're still calling this a phone. Like, really, this is like the most powerful computer ever existed until it came into play, right? So I mean obviously this is like a year old, so there's something more powerful, but like this is more powerful than everything we was using with the Oregon Trail.
You know, actually, as a matter of fact, like I remember, like I think this has more storage and probably more computing power than like the PlayStation 3.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the PlayStation 3 is 15 years old, but like the PlayStation 3 was like state of the art revolutionary.
Revolutionary. Yeah. As you know, was it crazy? Like, we're going to show our age, but we've been talking about our age anyway. It's like, when you look at 2K now and then like go back to like Double Dribble, like the first, that was like, that. I feel like that was the first hot basketball game was Double Dribble. Yeah. You'd be like, yo, this looks crazy.
Even like comparing, like, what was it? Like NBA Live 94 to that.
Yeah. It's crazy. You know what I'm saying? No, but you know what we used to say when the game came out? You're going to remember this. Like, yo, this look real. So you go back and look at a game from 96, you're like, this look real. And you look at today, you're like, that joint did not look real at all.
Yo, no lie, that's how I felt about NBA Jam.
NBA Jam, like, this look real. But then you go back, like, damn, like, nah, bro, it really didn't look. In comparison to what we looking at today, nah, it really died.
Yeah. I mean, but like, you know, I mean, but like therein lies the advancement. But like, you know, I don't even, like, I remember we were talking about the, I lost my train of thought, man. Mm-hmm. We're talking about problems with the too many employees, not enough.
Too many employees, not enough for
you. You got to create a lane for yourself to be useful. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and yo, entrepreneurship is, yo, everybody's not built for entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
But you still, like, I approach mentorship in this fashion. When I'm seeking a mentor for myself, the first question I ask myself is, how can I be useful to you? How can I make your life easier? Mm-hmm. How can I do something that you just don't have the time to do and would rather not, so I can learn how to handle myself when I find myself in your situation?
Got you. So I teach entrepreneurship. This definitely not for everybody, but I do think we are in the space in the world, especially being in the U.S., because, you know, everybody doesn't have the same benefits that we have, that you should be creating some type of side income. I guess that's entrepreneurship or whatever, but like, just the thought that you just dependent on your job for certain, like, for all your income, it to me is like, it's not safe.
Now, like, as a matter of semantics, not necessarily that I disagree with the principle. Yeah. I don't necessarily think that that's entrepreneurship as much as that is like hustle and grind. Because you know, especially, you know, if I can maneuver investments in such a way where I can receive a dividend that totals to something that's going to cover my bills for the quarter. That's not entrepreneurship.
That's not entrepreneurship. My definition
of the word.
Yeah.
But it is like a grind and a hustle. It's like, okay, at least my bills, there's a high chance that my bills are going to be covered.
I like that framing of it better. Yeah. I like that framing on it better. So let's put the bow on it. Cause we went off but this is good though, cause this is natural conversation. We went off two smart brothers talking about multiple things, and we're showing the complexity of Black men. You know what I'm saying?
And like how it all connects.
Yeah. So connect the what solutions do you propose for the education system? We can end it on that. And I could bring you back on if you wanna come back on. You know what I mean?
Nah, I gotta come back on because, like, we still never talked about Nipsey or Biggie.
Yeah. And you're a wrestling fan too, right?
I am.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that, but so you gotta come back. But go ahead.
You see, it's hard to come up with a solution because it's difficult to identify the problem, right? Okay. It's difficult to identify the problem because when we're talking about the idea of a problem, we can look at it from a multitude of directions. There's equitable access to quality education. But I think the first question that has to be asked is, what is a quality education? What does that look like? And the fact of the matter is that this career that I'm currently in hasn't existed for much more than 100 years.
Yeah, that this whole idea of everybody get educated, basically.
It's a brand new concept.
Brand new concept. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a brand new concept, and we're still learning. We're still learning how the brain works when it comes to learning information.
Yeah.
So basically all you have is a blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we're learning how learning works in this context. Like, you know, if you ask me, I don't necessarily see the reason most specifically 12th graders, but I'd argue as far back as 10th grade, I don't know why those kids are in school 6 hours a day, 5 days a week. Because the second we got to college, wasn't like that?
Nah, not at all.
Did we learn any less?
It's not, I would say we probably learned more.
And yo, I was 16 years old when I started college.
Damn, you were one of the smarty out. You were smarty out.
No, I just got a late birthday.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I did third and fourth grade in the same year.
How you do that? You got skipped?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was in the middle of the year.
Yeah, I suppose I got skipped too. But my mother didn't let me because she said I was she wanted me to stay with my friends, and we moved like five times after that with five different schools.
That's the reason why I only got skipped one grade, and that's
all. Okay.
Yeah, but
So you was I'm assuming you was an engineer major at undergrad.
Yo, actually, I went to scholarship because I decided to go with sociology.
You went with sociology?
Yeah. No, because like I wanted to get into computers, and I was just like, yo, you know what? I'm sick of math and I'm sick of science.
But you were an engineer though. You was on the engineer track?
Nah, like I was on a comp, like I wanted to go with comp sci. I wanted to go more like into like information technology. And hindsight 2020 for my pockets, I wish I did. But I'm glad I didn't. Because I wouldn't, because butterfly effect, I wouldn't be where I'm at now.
Got you.
You know, able to try and impart some of this foresight that I wish I had, some of the foresight that I have had. But
So we're gonna bring it back too, because I think I cut you off. So I'm not gonna cut you off this time. I'm gonna wrap it up. Wrap it up in a nice little bow. So we was talking about. So you were saying like this profession only been around for a little over 100 years.
Oh yeah, profession hasn't been around. The question was how we solve the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is that like we don't know how to teach people because we're still figuring out how we learn. Because like I teach earth science, I teach chemistry, and I teach physics. Like I'm a special education teacher. Mm-hmm. In general education classrooms, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, it's not so much that you know that a star forms from a nebula, and then like after it's in its main sequence, it might become a red giant or a supernova. Like all that stuff is completely unnecessary. But science and curiosity works no matter the subject. It's just like, you know, what is it about the way that Biggie rhymed that made him so much better compared to the way that Chris Webber rhymed?
Okay.
Right?
I haven't heard Chris Webber rhyme, I don't think. Go ahead.
Yo, didn't he do a song or something like back in the 90s?
I'm pretty sure he did. A lot of the athletes is making songs. I probably did hear the song, but I just don't remember it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm not pulling that out of my behind.
I'm pretty sure he probably rapped. I mean, because he was part of that I'm the cool basketball player guy.
Fab Five.
I'm pretty sure he rapped.
But you know, just like what made that appealing is just like, okay, why is the iPhone the popular phone, whereas I could get this unlocked brick of a phone, but it has like a 4 week battery life and has like, you know, the 7G data download speeds. You know, like, how does that work? Like, all of those types of things, you know, the way that the world works, that's how you can create your niche for yourself. Because, you know, trying to be this super well-rounded person, if you please everybody, you please a nobody.
Yeah, we can end it on that, man, because it's, you can end it on that and continue it later on, because that's a jewel within itself. Like, it's like, so I had to learn that with my law practice. Is like, I'm going to be a jack of all trades and a master of none. I mean, it's an old school saying, but it's true, especially now, because this thing right here, we're walking around with the most powerful computer ever invented. Like, you either, if you got your phone with the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, it's like, but for the phones that came after your phone, this is the most powerful joint in existence. You know what I'm saying? So it is like having useless knowledge, you can put quotes on it, which is, you know, like you said, I mean, I'm sure like calculus is useful to somebody somewhere, but like I never even got the calculus, so I ain't gonna even sit here and lie. But I never even used the geometry like that. It's like I know the concept of it, and I mean I've used it here and there, but post school, like the times I've used geometry, maybe 3 times. I mean, I use algebra all the time, right? Even if it's, I'm not even using the X's and the Y's and all that. I use that, you know, but like, who's really using pre-calc in the real world?
You know, I was telling somebody, last time I used sine, tangent, and cosine and all that was when I was taking my certification exams.
That's funny. That sounds about accurate, man. It's like, yo, who uses it? Also, like, we could end it right here because I'll get ready to go. But like, even in law school, it's like, why are we learning about all these laws that you can't even, like, if you cite these laws in the go ahead, something's on your mind.
I didn't realize it until I entered it. But law, law is actually a part of STEM education. Science, technology, engineering, and math. Like, law, the practice of identifying a problem, coming up with a solution, understanding the rules as they apply, that is scientific thinking.
That's definitely true.
Yeah. You know, so, and which was the ultimate point that I was making, that the information that I'm teaching you isn't important. How you look at the world is, because the way that you look at the world in this context, or the way that we're looking at an issue in this context, is the exact same way that you should look at the world in the rest of the context. The same way that, like, you know, just why is Drake the GOAT? Well, what criteria are you using? And the criteria that you're using will determine whether or not I actually agree with that statement.
Got you. All right, let's end it here, man, because we can go on for hours, man. I got to get home. So tell people where they can find you at, or if you want them to find you.
Yo, you know what? Even though I have social media.
Yeah, you want to be on. Okay.
Yeah, like I don't really be on anything. Yo, if you want to find anything, yo, if you want to support me in some shape or fashion, check out what Shy Beats is doing. I know Mikey the Mixtape is still out. Mikey Dollars has some projects that are out on iTunes. God bless the dead. Rest in peace, FBG Duck. You know, I know that was his man. But besides that, get people to run your boards of education who have spent time in a classroom.
Mm. Got you. And there you have it, folks. So thanks, man. Thanks for doing the show, man. And like, all the listeners, if you like this podcast, please like, rate, and review. I'm gonna have all this information, what he wants you to have, in the show notes. What I said, like, rate, review. I'm doing the standard. And share this podcast if you like this. We just kicking it. I got him on record saying that he's gonna come back. He's gonna be introduced as Gerard and not Gerald. We're gonna do it right. But he never corrected me, so I don't even know. I just assumed that was his name. This all these years. It's been like 15 years. He never told me. He never corrected me.